Yes, start the recording.
Okay, we're recording.
Hello.
Hello, and welcome
to Ghoul Society.
That's my big sister, Jamie.
And that's my little sister, Sarah. We are grateful to be recording on the unceded, stolen territories of the Songhees and Esquimalt First Nations, and the Lekwungen and Wasanich peoples, whose historical relations with the land continue to this day. As uninvited guests, we are committed to disrupting racism and colonial violence within ourselves, our families, and our communities. By listening to this podcast, you've officially been inducted into the Ghoul Society.
What's up? Oh, hey. I forgot to tell you that.
More new news.
Yeah, I've been saving it for episode.
Oh my gosh, this is our third episode recording, but for y'all,
I was gonna say it during our little snack break, but I thought I'd save it. So I got a haircut yesterday, right?
Yes.
And the hairdresser was great. I love her. She did a great job.
Love that.
She was like, "This is what I think we should do," because I just wanted to trim. Mm-hmm. So she's like, "This is what I think we should do. If we do this, your hair will look bad because you have low porosity hair." And I was like, "What is that?" I guess it's a hair type.
Yeah.
And it essentially, my hair doesn't hold moisture very well.
Oh.
And so there's a way you can test it. And like my hair dries super slowly. Mm-hmm. And that's like indicator that you have it. And also if I use a lot of products, my hair gets way down and it gets oily way faster.
Me too. Wait, doesn't that mean that it holds more moisture?
So it's hard. So the follicles, hold on. Okay. Let me make sure I'm
pull it up.
Let me make sure I'm saying this right. So the hair has a tightly packed cuticle layer that makes it difficult to absorb water, oils, and other substances. So so your hair doesn't absorb it.
It just goes on top of it.
So like when you're in the shower, does your hair take a super long time to get wet? Because mine does.
I never really thought about it. I just thought it was normal amount of time.
I thought so too, but apparently I have low porosity hair.
I guess I have to make sure that the water's going like all over everywhere.
Yeah,
but isn't that normal?
I mean, but also you can test it, like if you get a bowl of water and you dip your hair into it.
Oh, it kind of floats a little bit.
Then you have low porosity hair.
What?
Because your hair isn't absorbing the water, the moisture in it.
That makes sense.
And it does.
That's
your
why
hair
it's always dry.
Yeah. So I was
fuck.
Yeah. So I found this out and I was like, "What? Why has no one told me?"
Oh my gosh.
So, I'm on a mission to find the right shampoo and conditioner for my hair.
Mm-hmm.
Because
it sounds like the beginning of a pros ad. It's not.
It's not. Anyway, so yeah, it's kind of fun. And also, apparently, if you have low porosity hair, it can lead to a lot of buildup in your hair.
Mm-hmm.
From if you use stuff on it, I don't know, or just like your regular shampoo. So you should like use a clarifying shampoo every once in a while to make sure that your hair and scalp are actually getting clean.
Wow, that's crazy.
Yeah, so now I've been like researching shampoos and conditioners. I did it all night for hours.
And that's what you did on New Year's.
Yeah. And because everyone's hair is different, everyone's like, "Oh, this one worked great for me." And then other people are like, "Oh, this one did not work good for me at all and I hate it." And I'm like,
so much work. It's so much money.
Yeah. Looking at drugstore shampoos.
Yeah. That's fair.
Essentially, you just need a shampoo and conditioner that doesn't have sulfates, and the first ingredient is water.
Oh, I think mine is like that.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Then you're doing great. And then
thanks.
You can use like a really nourishing like
jojoba
oil. Yeah, oil.
Yeah.
Like if you get a conditioner that has that in, or like a deep moisture.
I actually do really like my conditioner. I don't think it's on my hair right. Maybe it is. Yeah, because it doesn't weigh it down.
Yeah,
and it feels really good.
What is it?
I got it from Neza Naturals. I don't remember what it is, but I did get like more of like a deep one or whatever.
Yeah,
like a more conditiony one.
Yeah,
but I don't put it on my scalp.
No, I never put conditioner on my scalp.
Yeah, because or else my hair will get really greasy. But I've gotten to the point where like I only have to wash my hair once a week.
Yeah.
Because, yeah.
Nice. Because
turns out if you don't destroy your hair's natural oils, then
yeah. I try doing that, but I just can't with my job. I can't train my hair. I've tried it so many times. I tried it when I was landscaping. Did not work.
Why?
I don't know.
You can still get your hair wet and rinse it. You just don't use shampoo.
Yeah, but then my hair is still greasy and oily.
Yeah,
and
but yucky. You're landscaping. Who cares?
Well, I can't do it now, no, can I? Yeah. I can't have greasy hair.
No.
Imagine how that would look.
I know. Maybe
I don't wash
next
my,
time.
I feel like I don't wash my hair that often. I wash it like 3 times a week.
Yeah, that's pretty good.
Like every other day.
I think that's pretty good.
I feel like that's pretty common. It's not every day.
Yeah.
Sometimes it's every day. Like if
that's crazy.
Well, no, like only if I'm working out and then it messes up my hair schedule and then I'm like, oh, but then if I don't wash my hair today, even though I washed it yesterday, then it'll be all gross tomorrow because I was all sweaty.
Sometimes just water helps though.
Not for me.
Have you tried?
Yes.
Oh.
You think I haven't tried?
I don't know.
So many things.
I don't know.
Maybe I just need a better shampoo.
Maybe, baby.
Anyway, I found that out. Isn't that pretty cool?
That is pretty cool.
So now I'm on the hunt. I might just try, you know, Shea Moisture. Have you ever seen those? That one?
Yes.
Yeah, they're pretty. They're like a very popular shampoo for curly hair. Because also,
yeah,
I let my hair air dry yesterday before I went to get my hair cut. And my front pieces were so curly. I was like...
Well, you also had, like, ringlets when you were younger.
Yeah. So my hairdresser was like, if you found the right shampoo and stuff and conditioner and then also some lightweight other things, I would probably have wavy hair.
Yeah.
And I said, I want that.
Yeah. It would be so nice.
Yeah. So now I'm trying to figure that out in my life.
Yeah. That's a big journey.
I know. It's what happens. New year, new me.
Yeah, right.
Right? What the hell?
Well, like, you don't really want new year, new you. You just want to keep on trucking on the best version of yourself that you can. You know?
Yeah, I am.
Otherwise, you're
going to
put way too much pressure on yourself, and then you're going to fail, and then you're going to feel bad for failing.
Yeah. You're so right.
Thanks. I'm a genius.
Yeah.
Whatever. Anyways.
Anyway.
Can I tell you my story?
Yeah. Jamie's so eager. Jamie's nothing else to say.
Well, what should I don't know. I literally looked around the room to try to be like, what? I don't. I'm drinking a nice tea. And
okay,
also, though, I just want to say I love our pullover so much.
I know.
We're wearing our Ghoul Society merch. It's not actually merch, and I love it.
Co-host merch.
Yeah, host merch. Not a co-host. Well,
I'm a co-host and you're a co-host because we host the podcast
together.
Doesn't
that just mean we're both the hosts?
Yeah, but you're a co
oh
host.
Cooperative host.
Yeah.
Okay,
sure. That is what it is.
Yeah, and it is what it is, what it is, what it is. So anyway.
What it is, what it isn't.
First, I'm going to bring you to Hollywood.
The stars.
Actually, we're going to be in Hollywood the whole time.
First, I'm going to bring you here. And we're going to stay here.
We're going to stay, okay? We're talking 1920s.
Oh,
glitz
shit.
Glitz and glam.
Oh, shit.
Hollywood. We're going to talk about the Hollywood sign. Do you know anything about the Hollywood sign?
I don't know.
That's okay.
There's something dark with it.
Yeah, there is something dark with it. That's
all I know. I feel like I should know more, but it's not really in my brain anymore.
Fair. There's a lot of things to know.
There's a lot of things in my brain.
There's so much spooky true crime stuff in my brain that I can't, like, I mix everything up.
Yeah,
I'm like, oh, this? Is that the one of this? And then I'm like, no, that's the one of that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyways, so the Hollywood sign was constructed in 1920s by real estate developers Woodruff and Schultz. Their development that they were trying to advertise for was called Hollywood Land.
Yes.
And it was advertised as a superb environment without excessive cost on the Hollywood side of the hills. The sign was created by the Crescent Sign Company, and each of the letters was 30 feet wide and 50 feet high. And the entire thing was filled with 4,000 light bulbs.
What? 4,000 light bulbs?
I know. The sign would flash in segments. It would say, Hollywood Land, lighting up individually like that, before the whole thing would entirely light up.
Whoa.
Below the sign was also a searchlight that attracted more attention to the sign. So this sign was actually never intended to be permanent. You can imagine it was essentially just a billboard. It was just a billboard. And it was held in place by like metal cables.
Yeah.
And also just like giant signposts and just kind of like slapdash together a little bit.
Okay.
There's some really cool old photos of like the Hollywood Land sign in the background and people like on these tractors.
Yeah.
These like men in business suits. And then the workers are still working and the businessmen are like cheering like with their hats. I was like, oh my God.
Wait, so it was supposed to be like Hollywood Land was supposed to be like a suburb?
Yeah, essentially. Yeah. Okay. It was a developed
rich
like,
people.
Yeah, a real estate development.
Right. I'm going to look at Hollywood Land sign.
Okay. Ironically, the real estate venture initially failed.
Oh. Yep.
Yep. Because
they spent so much money on the sign.
Maybe it was part of that. But the thing is, it failed because of the Great Depression.
Oh. Yeah. Frickin' classic. Thanks, Great Depression, for nothing.
I know. So in 1923, 3 years later that it was built, it was officially dedicated to Hollywood because it started to become an internationally recognized symbol with the rise of America's cinema.
Right.
So it was dedicated then, and then I guess Hollywood bought out the sign in 1944.
Oh, okay.
So there's like 20 years where the company was just like, it's dedicated to you guys, and Hollywood was like, okay. But then they officially staked their claim to it.
Okay.
And they're like, nice. In 1949, they restored the sign. Oh, because, sorry, I forgot this little part. One of the H fell down.
A classic.
Yeah. And it was just like there. This was after the 30, like, it was after 1932 that the H had fallen down.
Okay.
So then in 49, they restored the sign, they put the H back up, and that's when they removed land. So then it just stayed as Hollywood. Then eventually in 1978, the new Hollywood sign was built.
Oh, okay. I was going to say, don't they just have lights under the sign now?
Yeah, it's definitely different. It's definitely better.
Yeah.
And it's fully like blocked off. Like you can't actually go to it.
No.
But if you ask, I don't know, there's someone that you can ask that will like let you in and guide you down to the sign if you really want to.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm.
I thought it was illegal.
Well, it is illegal to trespass.
Oh, but it's not trespassing if that person brings you.
No, exactly.
Great.
So all of this paints the scene and the setting for our story today. And our story is about Peg Entwistle. Do you know that name at all?
No.
Okay.
Am I supposed to?
No. I was just curious. I'm always curious if you know the stories beforehand or not.
I don't know Peg.
Okay. Well, you'll get to know her.
Great.
All right. So Peg was born Millicent Lillian Entwistle in Glamorgan, Wales, to Emily and Robert Smythe Entwistle. Robert was an actor, her father.
Mm-hmm.
And so she spent her early life in West Kensington, London, though.
Oh.
Not Ontario.
That was Kingston, but okay.
Oh, yeah. Ah, shit. Oh, wait. Isn't there also a Kingston, Jamaica? Yeah.
Okay. I don't know.
I think so.
Am I supposed to know?
I don't know. Can I quickly just...
Sure.
Beep boop it up.
How do you know that there's a Kingston in Jamaica?
Because Bob Marley sings about it.
Oh.
Yeah, it's the capital of Jamaica. Bam, baby.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Nailed it.
Great.
Anyways.
Next.
So her dad was an actor. She spent her early life in London. And then I think her dad divorced her mom.
Okay.
He was like, see you later.
Yeah.
And they, as in Millicent and Robert, went to New York. So they arrived in New York sometime around 1913. It's unclear exactly how they did, but documents show her and her father were first in Cincinnati, Ohio.
Okay.
And then New York City.
Okay.
So somehow,
why eventually... Why would they go to Ohio first?
I don't know.
That doesn't make any sense if you're traveling from Europe, because they were in London, right?
Yeah.
Why wouldn't they just go to New York?
I don't know. Probably for work, honestly. Like, that makes the most sense to me. Also, her father remarried when they got to the States and had two sons.
Damn.
Yeah, so maybe he was, like, pining after someone and she was like, I live in Ohio. I don't know. I don't know. And then it's also unclear how they got from New York to Hollywood.
Yeah, literally across the country.
Yeah.
Literally.
Literally
opposite across the country. Yes. Of America.
But let's just go with it.
Okay, great.
So Robert briefly worked as a stage manager in Hollywood. And this was when Peg was really just wanting to be more part of that scene. And she knew from a young age that she wanted to be an actress as well.
Yeah.
She renamed herself Peg after the play called Peg Oh My Heart. And this is what she was known for. Still to this day, she's known by Peg.
Right.
In 1921, her stepmother passed away.
Oh.
And then a year later, Robert died, her father, from a hit and run accident on Park Avenue in Hollywood. At this time, Peg was 14 years old.
Oh my God.
And her two younger half-brothers and her were taken in by their uncle, who traveled to New York with them and managed Broadway actor Walter Hampton. So they're going back and forth. Oh, sorry. They travel. The uncle came from London as well to New York. They did a bunch of work there. And then I'm sure that they were like, Hollywood is the place that we need to be.
Right.
It's up and coming. Let's go. So
her mom just is not in the picture.
No.
That's sad. Her dad died and her mom isn't even there.
Yeah. There was also some sources that said her mom died.
Oh.
But I don't think so, because then in the divorce papers, the dad is just like, I'm divorcing this woman and she's not to parent the children.
Oh, shit. Okay.
Kind of thing. So maybe she was just AFK parent. Or something.
Right. AFK. Away from keyboard.
Yep. So Peg and her brothers were living with their uncle in Los Angeles. She trained briefly as an actress in Los Angeles, but she wanted to go back to Boston and New York City. So they go back.
Oh my God, Peg. I thought you wanted to be a Hollywood star.
I know.
I mean, New York is also the place to be.
New York is the place to be. I mean, here's the thing. This story could be a little bit mixed up.
Yeah.
You know, like they could have actually traveled first to California.
Yeah.
And then been like, this isn't working out. Let's go to New York.
Right.
I don't know. It's a lot of weird traveling back and forth, but there's trains, so maybe they just...
Yeah, I was going to say, there's no planes yet, aren't there?
No. Not commercial planes. Not commercial planes, no.
Right.
So by 1925, at 17 years old, Peg was studying at Huntington Theater, which is in New York, I think.
New York.
Fact check me, but I'm pretty sure it is. She was an extra in Hampton's Broadway production of Hamlet, and she was also in a film called The Wild Duck, put on by Henrik Ibsen. Oh, sorry, it wasn't a film. It was a play. Betty Davis. You know Betty Davis?
Betty Davis eyes.
Yeah. Betty Davis saw this play and saw Peg in it. Yeah. And she turned to her mother and said, I want to be exactly like Peg Entwistle. So Peg actually inspired Bette Davis, which is pretty cool.
And her eyes.
And her eyes. Her eyes were inspired by Peg. Exactly.
Damn, that's cool.
Yeah. In 1926, Peg was recruited by New York Theatre Guild, where she performed in 10 Broadway plays.
Whoa.
Her most known role was in the 1927 hit called Tommy, which ran for 232 performances.
Oh my god.
This is the play, of course, that she is most remembered for.
Whoa.
Because, yeah, 10 plays, but like how many showings of each play, you know? Yeah.
That's a lot.
It's a lot. Around the same time, in 1927, Peg married Robert Keith, but then they promptly divorced in 1929.
Great.
There were charges of cruelty, and along these charges, she claimed that he didn't tell her that he'd been married before and also had a six-year-old child.
Oh, so he lied.
Yes.
Great. Classic.
Or just, like, ignored the truth of his reality.
Good for her for being able to divorce him.
Yeah. Slay. I mean, she had to ask to divorce him.
Yes.
Of course, but the courts granted it.
Because he deceived her.
Yes, exactly. This sent Peg's personal and professional life into a spiral.
Oh no.
Her well-being spiraled, and so did her career, because he is like a big hotshot guy
in the
world, you know? And she's like, oh fuck. And so... This is 1927 is kind of when the spiraling starts. In 1932, a few years after, she goes back to Los Angeles and she's living with her uncle again. Peg wanted to play more challenging roles, but she was often cast as a comedian, most often the attractive, good-hearted ingenue.
Oh.
And an ingenue, I didn't know this, but it's a stock character in film who is generally a young girl or woman that is endearingly innocent.
Mm-hmm.
So she's just... always being cast as, like, kind of this side character.
Right.
So something that she said at that time is, she said, I would rather play roles that carry conviction. Maybe it is because they are the easiest and yet the hardest things for me to do. To play any kind of an emotional scene, I must work up to a certain pitch. If I reach this in my first word, the rest of the words and lines take care of themselves. But if I fail, I have to build up the balance of the speeches, and in doing this, the whole characterization falls flat.
Mm.
I feel then I am cheating myself. I don't know whether other actresses get the same reaction or not, but it does worry me. So you can kind of sense, like, her state of mind at this time is she's feeling imposter syndrome.
Yeah.
She's feeling upset. She's also feeling upset that she's not getting any roles beyond, like, stock characters.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, she's also feeling like she can't quite get into these roles that she's wanting to.
Right.
You know? Like, when she is acting. And so, yeah, she's feeling, like, a lot of very intense career, personal emotions and feelings. Yeah. And this is her whole life, right? So, in early 1932, Peg made her last Broadway appearance in J.M. Barrie's Alice Sit by the Fire, which also starred Laurette Taylor. Laurette Taylor struggled with alcoholism and missed two evening performances, which resulted in refunds to ticket holders.
Oh.
Yeah. The show was canceled, and Peg, along with other cast members, were given only a week's salary rather than a percentage of the box office gross.
What the hell?
Yeah. So, like, even the work she's doing, everything is going wrong. Like, everything is going wrong.
Yeah.
And it's all just kind of turning into hell.
Oh, no.
Also, at this time, it's, like, the depth of the Great Depression, too, right? Mm-hmm. So, there's a lot of things happening here. After this, Peg had a role in The Mad Hopes alongside Billy Burke, who you might know from the original Wizard of Oz. She was Glinda the Good Witch. This show ran from May 23rd to June 4th at the Belasco Theater in downtown LA. After the show closed, Peg won her first and only credited film role with Radio Pictures, which is later called RKO. And this film is titled 13 Women.
Oh.
Yeah. So they saw her in that. They were like, she needs to be in 13 Women. Let's get her in. The film premiered around October of that same year at the Roxy Theater in New York City.
Okay.
Unfortunately, before the film premiered, she was called to do another role, but she lost this role, and it was in a film called Bill of Divorcement, and she lost the role to Katharine Hepburn.
Oh, shit.
So she's, like, competing with the big names. Like, she's a big name. Yeah. But she just can't quite get it.
Right.
She also was devastated to learn that most of her role in 13 Women was cut by the editors because the plot line included taboo subjects.
Like what?
So 13 Women was a psychological thriller about a group of sorority sisters who killed themselves after being sent forecastings of their own doom. What the fuck? So not only is it dealing with, like, suicide, the film also dealt with lesbianism. Mm-hmm. Which was cut in post-production due to homophobia.
Yeah.
So,
okay.
Yeah. At this time as well, Peg's contract with RKO was so close to not being renewed.
Oh, shit.
I think it wasn't renewed.
Great.
So, on September 16th, 1932, a hiker was hiking the trail below the Hollywood sign when she came across a purse, a jacket, and one shoe that were neatly stacked. Oh, inside creepy. The jacket pocket, she finds a note. The note says, "I am afraid. I am a coward. I am sorry for everything. And if I had done this a long time ago, it would have saved a lot of pain." Signed, P.E. So the hiker is confused. Yeah. She's like, okay, this is a suicide note.
Yeah.
She looks around. She's like, what's happening?
Hello.
She looks down the hill into the ravine where she sees a body.
Oh my God.
So she goes immediately to the Hollywood police station and she tells them everything that she has found. The police head up to the Hollywood sign, retrieve the body, and put a notice in the newspaper. There was no ID. The only thing that they had to go on was a note inside her jacket. She signed the note with her initials, P.E. However, if you remember, her full name is Millicent Lillian Entwise, right? Yeah. And Peg was kind of this new Hollywood name.
Yeah.
A couple days after this, and obviously her uncle is like, that's weird. She never came home.
Yeah.
But he's like still kind of waiting. Like maybe she is with friends. Maybe she skipped town for a bit. You know, it's the 1930s.
Yeah.
But a couple days after, her uncle's reading the newspaper and sees the note because they put it in the newspaper. He puts two and two together and realizes that the note is from Peg.
Right.
So he goes to the police station, probably like the coroner's officer, whatever, and he identifies the body as being Peg Entwistle.
Oh.
Yeah.
But why was one shoe stacked?
I don't know. What?
Was she wearing the other shoe? Did she throw herself in the ravine?
So police believe she left the house, turned right onto the main road, and she made her way up to the Hollywood sign. You can see the Hollywood sign from her uncle's house, so it's not that long of a walk. But you have to, like, go through the hills.
Yeah.
So it's kind of, like,
far.
Probably, I was watching a video on this guy who, like, retraced her steps.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah, he does, like, living history stuff. It's really cool. Oh, cool. And I think he said it would have been, like, an hour. So she's, walking, hiking for a long time.
The whole time. Oh, that gave me chills.
This is what I'm going to do. I know.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, so she would have walked up the southern slope toward the Hollywood sign, climbed up one of the ladders, like the service ladders that was attached to the H, and jumped to her death
from there. Oh my God.
That's what they suspect happened. I don't know how they connect those two. Probably just from the autopsy report. They probably found that out. Apparently, there's also, I don't know if this is substantiated or not, but allegedly the day after she took her own life, she got a letter saying that she got the part. One of the parts that she really wanted to get in an upcoming film through RKO.
Oh no.
Yep. Yeah. So her death brought sensationalized publicity, of course. On September 20th, her funeral was held at W.M. Strather Mortuary in Hollywood. A handful of years later, it's not like a 100th year anniversary or anything, but in 2014, approximately 100 people marked the anniversary of her death by gathering in a parking lot of Beechwood Market in Hollywood, watching 13 women on an outdoor screen. Proceeds from a raffle were donated to the American Foundation for Suicide Prevention in Whoa. Peg's name.
Oh.
Yeah, which I think beautiful. Is really beautiful. Yeah, so there was some, like, industry feedback from this. Like, this is one of the most notorious stories and also kind of added to this, like, craziness about the Hollywood sign and how it's like this kind of, I don't know, this like fascinating, huge like item and part of just like Hollywood's canon of existing in the world.
Yeah.
So, Whoa. Yeah. But some other like kind of industry nods to this situation is on Netflix, there's a show that's made by Ryan Murphy. It's called Hollywood. And Peg apparently was a really huge inspiration for the show. He states, "She was always the cautionary tale, the idea that Hollywood can chew you up and spit you out and not really be fair. I've never really ventured far from that idea, so I really just related to her struggle and her sadness." So I thought that was kind of beautiful.
Yeah.
And then in Lana Del Rey's song, Lust for Life.
Yeah.
At the very beginning, the lyrics say, "Climb up the H of the Hollywood sign."
Oh.
I know. And I never had made that, like, connection before. But I thought that was really interesting, too, because that song, like, is about having a lust for life that keeps you alive.
Yeah.
Whoa. And so, yeah, I was like, whoa, interesting. So now we're going to go to a couple ghost stories of Peg's spirit and people seeing her spirit. So obviously that's a super intense, sad story.
Yeah.
We will have resources at the end of the episode and of course in the description. And you can always call the National Suicide Hotline if you or anyone else in your life is feeling suicidal or dealing with extreme depression or light depression or anything of that nature.
Yeah.
So in 1940s, remember I was talking about how the letter H fell down?
Yeah.
People actually thought it was Peg's spirit.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah. They were like, damn. Peg is so mad.
She's just mad. She's like, mad. Fuck, she's you, like, Hollywood.
Yeah. Yeah. So damn. That's it. That's that. Oh. That's that little story.
Oh, wow. Okay. I mean, makes sense.
People have said that when they walk in that area, because you can still like walk there,
yeah,
it's just that you can't go down to the sign.
Yeah.
They've been overcomed by the scent of gardenias, which was her favorite flower and a perfume that she wore as well.
Oh, wow.
Someone visiting the sign in 2013 said they started sneezing due to the overpowering scent of gardenias, and this person was overcome with an intense, weird feeling. They claim, "And then there was this woman with blonde hair, and she seemed to be kind of walking on air. I immediately ran the other way."
Oh my god.
So that was the most recent sighting of
her. Oh, dang. Peg's just haunting the sign.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. In 1990, a couple was walking in the area and came across a woman dressed in vintage 1930s attire. They said she seemed to be quite disoriented.
Oh, no.
However, the woman vanished right in front of them when they tried to help. They had no prior knowledge of Peg or of her story. Whoa. They just had this experience, and they were like, okay.
What the hell? Yeah, what do you do after that? You're, like, on a hike in the hills, and then you see a ghost, and you're just like, finish my hike.
Yeah.
Like, what?
We're like, okay, I guess I'll just keep on hiking.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because I'll keep walking.
2 years before that, in 1988, on a late night, four friends, which were high schoolers and college students, snuck through the fenced-off property to climb up to the Hollywood sign, as you do.
Classic.
Just before midnight, one of the members had to go home, so they all started hiking back down. On the way, one of them lost their footing and slid down the hill, separating them from the rest of the group.
Oh, no.
The group called out for him, but they couldn't find him. Eventually, he refound the group, but the tone of the night felt really off. There was a gravity of fear that hadn't been there before. Then, the guy who fell spotted a woman on the path coming toward them. He pointed her out to the group, and they all saw her. She was wearing a veil, a dress, and seemed like she was from the 1930s. Her footsteps were completely silent, and her walk up the hill was completely effortless. She got closer and closer to them, so they started running away.
Oh, shit. Okay.
And that's the story. They got out of there safely. And so it's kind of interesting because this is obviously like a woman in white.
Yeah.
But why would Peg be a woman in white is my kind of question.
Yeah.
So I don't know if it's Peg or some other spooky ghost spirit. Sorry.
Right.
Yeah. I have no idea. So that is the really sad, true story of how the Hollywood sign became so infamous. One of the reasons.
Yeah.
And the story of Peg Entwistle.
Wow.
An amazing, trying to strive actress who lost her life due to really intense mental health issues. Wow. I think I was reading or listening to something that was saying, like, if she were around today, she probably would have been diagnosed with some kind of like bipolar disorder or something. Okay. Because I think she had really intense periods of like mania and depressions.
Right.
And
wow. So that's too crazy. I know. Didn't know that. That's so sad.
I know, it's a really sad story.
That is probably one of the saddest ways I think I've heard of someone commit suicide.
Yeah. Climb up the H of the Hollywood sign.
Yeah.
I know.
Because she's alive until she hits the ground.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh my God.
I know. And then she like rolled down the ravine into the... Yeah. Oh my God. Yes.
Well, I'm kind of glad it... Hopefully people don't see like residual haunting. Like a loop. Because that... I feel like that would make it a little bit worse.
Yeah.
Like, it seems like they just see her going there.
Yeah.
Or she's just, like, hanging around there.
Yeah, she's a little bit confused. She's like, I don't really know what's going on.
Yeah.
Kind of thing.
Yeah.
But.
Well, I hope she's found peace.
Me too. I hope she's found peace. I hope that she is doing okay and able to pass on to the other side.
Yeah. That's so intense.
Yeah.
Wow.
So in Canada and the United States, the National Suicide Hotline is 988. In the United States, you can also call 211, which is the phone number for people in crisis who need emergency referrals to social and community services, but who are not experiencing any like immediate life-threatening emergencies.
Okay.
Of course, you can always call 911. Though we know that isn't always the best option for many people. You can also text the crisis text line. Mm-hmm. Crisis text line is a global nonprofit, and you can do this by texting HOME, H-O-M-E, to 741741. There's also many therapists if you are looking for a therapist. Let me see. Give me one second. Thank you for the hold music.
Okay.
The best online therapies to use are BetterHelp, Faithful Counseling, Regain, Pride Counseling, OnlineTherapy.com, and Our Ritual.
Hmm.
If you are experiencing anything, honestly, I love therapy.
Yeah.
I love going there no matter what.
Yeah.
Even when I'm not experiencing any kind of crisis. I think it's really, really beautiful. Mm-hmm. So thanks for listening to my story on Peg Entwistle.
Yes, thank you.
Thank you. And take care of your loved ones. Look after each other.
Yes, take care of yourselves.
Thank you for listening.
And we will see you guys next time. Bye.
If you have any questions, comments, or spooky stories of your own, you can email us at ghoulsocietypod@gmail.com or send us a DM on Instagram at ghoulsocietypod. You can find the show notes and trigger warnings in the episode's description. Give us a rate and a review online, on Spotify, on Apple Music, on Overcast, on wherever you listen to your podcasts. We would really, really appreciate it because that helps get our podcast out there. If you like it, if you have 5 seconds, click that 5 stars.
5 star, baby.
5 star, baby.
Thanks. Bing, 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 bing.